We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Spiller. Ms. Cody.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The question is, how can this Court review a silent record? Any substantive appellate review in this case was effectively crippled by the district court's terse discussion of Mr. Spiller's 851 argument that he was exposed to an unwarranted sentencing disparity.
But it's I don't understand that, since 851 is all about recidivism. And, you know, it's a statute, and you claim that you're not saying that it was an inappropriately used statute. As I understand it, you're saying that the philosophy that it represents is one that you would like to have seen the district judge choose not to follow. But the judge talks a lot about Mr. Spiller's rather lengthy criminal record, and whether he's attaching the cite to 851 to it or not seems to me kind of a detail. He's well aware that it's that Mr. Spiller is a pretty serious recidivist, and one who he thinks, he discounts a little bit on the sentence, but he thinks basically deserves a pretty stiff sentence.
That is correct, Your Honor. And we're not disputing the fact that the 851 was properly at least filed.
And you're also not, as I understand it, disputing the fact that once you filed it, the guidelines range that follows is the longer range, the 262 to 327. As I understand, though, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand your argument, you're just saying because, just like with the powder crack business, because the district judge might be entitled to disagree with the philosophy of 851, he should have, at the final stage, gone significantly below that 262 to 327.
That's precisely it, Your Honor. Our argument.
So in other words, we have a correctly used statute, and we have a correctly calculated guidelines range.
Mathematically speaking.
And legally speaking is what I'm saying.
We're not.
Then you finally wind up in the discretionary phase, and I just want to locate your argument. Your argument is located in the discretionary phase of sentencing.
That's correct. Our argument is purely a 3553A6 argument.
All right.
And so once the math was done, we are not disputing that Mr. Spiller was a career offender based upon his background. He had the three prior predicate convictions. We're also not disputing that he had the sufficient prior drug conviction for the 851 enhancement. Once we get out of the math land and get into discretionary land, the question then is, can the judge look at how we got the math and disagree with the policy of starting the objective conversation about the guidelines 7 years more because the government did not withdraw the 851.
And so my problem with your theory really is I can't read the sentencing record and come to the conclusion that the sentencing judge wasn't thinking about recidivism, wasn't thinking about, you know, what kind of sentence in light of the criminal history of this person should be done. I know he doesn't have like the paragraph that you would have liked, which is, I realize that my reference point is a sentencing range that's higher because 851 was involved, but I, you know, either think that's the right thing or I think it's the wrong thing. He just recognizes that 851 applies, as it does. You know, the government correctly used it. 851 is a congressional determination that the starting point should be higher for people like Mr. Spiller.
Well, but here's the crux of our argument. Our argument before the district court was the 851 enhancement is an exercise of standardless prosecutorial discretion.
Well, that we can't do, though. I mean, you kind of dance around this because we can't tell the government, you can't tell the government, do file an 851 motion, don't file, if you filed, withdraw. That is the prosecutorial discretion that exists in our system.
Certainly. And we're not taking the position that the court or the defense could have required the government to withdraw the 851. What we're arguing is exactly what the district court found in U.S. versus Young, and that was just last month, when the district court described this sort of varied practice of the use of 851. Sometimes they're filed, sometimes they're withdrawn. The district court in Young described that as, and I'm quoting here, a, quote, deeply disturbing, yet often replayed, shocking, dirty little secret of federal sentencing that results in, underscoring, jaw-dropping, shocking disparity.
But, you know, I remember that district judge said that. I don't think, A, that it's any kind of dirty little secret. I think anybody who knows anything about sentencing recognizes that 851s make a big difference. Sometimes it's the subject of plea bargaining. And one of the points of Booker was in the final analysis, if the judge thought that the computed sentencing range was too high, or for that matter too low, inside statutory boundaries, the judge could select a different sentence. But we don't really, or anyway, I'm not sure how we can see that this judge didn't realize he had that authority.
Your Honor, and that's why we're saying the court procedurally erred here, because what the government is asking this court to do is sort of infer from the judge's comments at the sentencing that some consideration occurred. But we articulated a specific argument, and that is that there is an unwarranted disparity that springs from the guideline range, that springs from the fact that the 851 was not withdrawn. And we know
that's where I think you have trouble. The statute says unwarranted disparity, and I think it's pretty clear that differences, higher sentences, caused by statutes are not unwarranted. One can't describe a statute as creating an unwarranted disparity. You can still ask for a sentence below the range, but not on account of unwarranted disparities.
Right. We're not saying that and that, Your Honor, I think your question goes to U.S. versus Labonte, and that is where the Supreme Court said that any disparity in the maximum statutory penalties between defendants is not unwarranted. Here, what we're saying is that the fact that Mr. Spiller is a career offender and the fact that the government did not withdraw the 851 enhancement against him meant that the low end of his career offender guideline range went from 188 to 262. So in other words, what that means is the conversation started 7 years above merely because the government exercised a subjective decision.
Yes,
that, well, it wasn't
and
subjective.
You can ask after the fashion of Kimbrough for a lower sentence, but I'm repeating myself, doesn't have anything to do with unwarranted disparities.
But
we've said repeatedly that a sentence within the guideline range cannot be attacked under 3553A6. It may be that there are other problems with it, but if you've got a properly computed guideline range and the sentence is within it, unwarranted disparities are not an issue. And the Supreme Court said that in Gaul.
But that's not necessarily correct, Your Honor, because if we look at
the Supreme Court says it, it is necessarily correct in our legal system.
No, I understand that, Your Honor, but my point is that if we look at this court's precedent in the crack powder disparity, this court has reversed on a number of occasions where the district court did not consider a defendant's...
But not because of unwarranted disparities under A6.
But, Your Honor, this court has also said repeatedly, for example, in Cunningham and Vidal and in Patrick and in Schroeder, that a district court's failure to consider a meritorious argument or one that was not so lacking in merit that it should be passed over in silence, it commits procedural error when it doesn't do that. And that's what our argument is here, that we made an argument that was not frivolous, that the district court passed over it in silence, and we just simply do not have a record here. We believe that there was an unwarranted disparity. The government disagrees with us, but we simply do not know with any certainty what the district court's conclusion was. And I see my time is I'm in my rebuttal time.
You have a minute left,
mm-hmm. So
if you want to save it.
Certainly, Ms. Cody. Mr. Burke.
May May it please the Court, Matt Burke on behalf of the United States. The District Court committed no procedural error in this case because it did adequately consider the defendant's argument that the 851 created an alleged unwarranted sentencing disparity. We know this first because when defense counsel specifically asked the District Court what its position was regarding the 851 enhancement and how it impacted the guideline range, the District Court specifically said, "I am not saying it does not impact it, but the sentence I have derived, since it is below the guidelines, is what I think is called for in this case." And so by saying that, what the District Court was making clear was, yes, I've heard your argument. Yes, I understand that the filing of the 851 impacts the guideline range. And, oh, by the way, I'm going below the guidelines here. But for all the reasons that I have already described, the sentence is what it is based on the very detailed 3553 analysis that the District Court had already gone into. And just as Your Honor, Judge Wood had pointed out, this issue regarding the filing of the 851 does go hand in hand with the issue of recidivism. And that was the focus of the court's concern in this case. That's what the District Court talked about at length when it said that this defendant's extensive criminal history and the need to incapacitate and to protect the public overwhelmed and trumped all of the other mitigating arguments made in this case.
Well, the District Court didn't find much terribly mitigating about Mr. Spiller, as I remember.
That is correct, Your Honor, because there isn't much terribly
mitigating.
So even
if there had been, you know, a lengthier discussion, it's not clear to me what factors were being put on the other side of the scale, apart from what he did in this particular case, obviously the offense for which he was being sentenced, and his lengthy record.
Your Honor, the evidence in aggravation in this case was staggering, as we've described in detail in our brief. Mm-hmm. And the District Court gave a very thoughtful and detailed discussion of why it was that he felt that a 240-month sentence was the appropriate sentence under the 3553A factors, and also made clear through that discussion that he understood the argument that the defense was making, but simply that it wasn't worth a whole lot of weight given the extensive aggravation here. So there's no.
And this was a little lower than what the government was asking for, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The government was asking for a sentence within the advisory range, which was 262 to 327, if I recall correctly.
Right.
He actually went below the advisory guideline range. And so to the extent that there's an unwarranted sentencing disparity here, it's not one that the defense is in a position to raise, given that it is below the advisory guideline range. And just very briefly, I'll touch on this argument very briefly. The other problem here is that there really wasn't sufficient information presented by the defense for the District Court to meaningfully compare this case to other cases in which the 851 was dismissed. And so what the District Court essentially was left with was the bare assertion by defense counsel, unsupported by any evidence or any specifics about any other case, that there's somebody else out there, like Mr. Spiller, who was treated more favorably.
How often does the government dismiss the 851s?
Your Honor,
it may go by office, but your office.
Your Honor, I don't know what the dismissal rate is, and I know that it's not in the record. And so I'm sorry, I can't answer your question.
I mean, you have litigated cases and plea agreement cases, I assume.
Certainly, Judge, and I would imagine that that does affect the rate.
But does anybody keep those statistics? Does the Department of Justice?
Your Honor, the only statistics that I'm aware of in terms of rate at which 851s are used are the statistics that were embodied in the 2011 Sentencing Commission report that is then reiterated in the United States versus Young District Court opinion out of the Northern District of Ohio that's cited in the defendant's brief. But just to touch on that very briefly, those statistics were never presented to the District Court, and it can't be procedural error for a District Court to not comment upon statistics that weren't presented to it. And the other thing is those statistics do not demonstrate an unwarranted sentencing disparity that prejudices Mr. Spiller, because the statistics don't say anything about the aggravating or mitigating circumstances present in individual cases, and you cannot have an unwarranted sentencing disparity unless there's at least one other case that is similar to yours.
No, I understand that. The other argument, though, is that, as the Supreme Court has recognized, that the correctly calculated sentencing guideline range with which one starts has a profound effect on the way the district court, it's supposed to, the way the district court is thinking about the case, hence the ex post facto, you know, decision. Mm-hmm. And so if the government is randomly filing 851s or pulling them and filing them, it does obviously affect one's starting point is the guideline range.
The filing or the absence of filing absolutely does affect the guideline range.
If you're spinning a roulette wheel, you know.
True. If you're spinning a roulette wheel, that would be arbitrary. The problem from the defendant's point of view is that there's no evidence in this case that the defendant or that the government behaved irrationally or arbitrarily as with respect to Mr. Spiller, or more to the point of his disparity argument, mm-hmm. that there's any similarly situated defendant with as horrific a criminal record as Mr. Spiller where the government said, yeah, let's give this guy a pass. And so if the government is consistently applying the 851 in cases like Mr. Spiller's, the disparity argument goes nowhere. So for all the reasons that we've stated in our brief and here today, if there are no further questions, I'll simply ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Burke. Anything further, Ms. Cody?
Briefly, Your Honors. Responding to Judge Wood's question about what is the rate at which these 851 enhancements are withdrawn, the government still cannot articulate that rate. And also,
wasn't it your burden to do that?
Well, Your Honor, no. Here where the government is exercising its discretion, us producing data concerning the rate at which it uses its discretion, it's still shrouded in mystery what goes into the decision to maintain an 851 enhancement or to withdraw an 851 enhancement. We have not seen, and I don't believe that the government could articulate here today, any standard or uniform policies for when those 851 enhancements are maintained or withdrawn. And that's really the crux of the argument that we made before the district court. And that's what motivated the decision in U.S. versus Young, that it's just too hard to understand or to tell from the government's record of how it decides when to keep an 851 or not.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.